Good morning. The title of the message is The Land. I'm going to read from Deuteronomy 30, 15 through 20, and maybe a little bit more. See, I set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction. For I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in obedience to him, and to keep his commandments, decrees, and laws. Then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land you are entering to possess. But if your hearts turn away and you are not obedient, and if you are drawn away to bow down to other gods and worship them, I declare to you this day that you will certainly be destroyed. You will not live long in the land you are crossing the Jordan to enter and possess. This day I call the heavens and the earth as a witness against you, that I set before you life and death, blessing and curses. Now choose life so that you and your children may live, and that you may love the Lord your God and listen to his voice and hold fast to him, for the Lord is your life, and he will bring you many years in the land he swore to give to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now I'm going to read another little passage over in Deuteronomy 31, probably around 16 and down 16 and 18. And then the Lord said to Moses, you are going to rest with your ancestors, and those people will soon prostitute themselves, those people meaning the Israelites, will prostitute themselves to foreign gods of the land they are entering. They will forsake me and break the covenant I made with them. And in that day I will become angry with them and forsake them, and I will hide my face from them, and they will be destroyed. Many disasters and calamities will come on them. In that day they will ask, have not these disasters come on us because our God is not with us? And I will certainly hide my face in that day because of all of their wickedness and in their turning to other gods. This is a really broad subject in which I am going to try to endeavor. And it came about because of, is this too loud? I'm moving away a little bit. Came about because I saw something on Facebook. It was about a rabbi and another Jewish person who was converted to Christianity, but still was a Jew, but still was a Messianic Jew, a Christian. And they had a debate on whether or not the New Testament was anti-Semitic. I thought it was really good. Some people listened to it, most of you haven't. The idea, I think, is kind of really deep and broad, and I don't know really where to start, other than I'll start off with the promise in which it was given to the Israelite people and how I see it. I'll give you how I see the history of through the Bible and where Israel stands. There is no clear answer to any of this. There is many different ideas along the way. And there's I don't proclaim to have the answer to give a wise answer, other than I think everybody needs a Jesus moment. I see the history of the Bible as this. Humanity fell, and God created, or a group of gods created humanity for whatever reason, I'm not really sure. And out of that process, one of them aligned themselves with the Israelite people, and that was called Yahweh, the God of Israel. The Old Testament talks many, many times about the God of Israel. And there was a promise given to Abram, and he later became Abraham. And the promise was that his offspring were going to be many and become a great nation, and that one of his seeds was going to bless all of the world. And the way I see it, as I read in this passage, it was all hinged on the fact of whether or not they could obey the decrees of Yahweh their God, what we call the Old Testament and many of the old Jewish laws, the 513 Jewish laws, the Ten Commandments, and on and on. Obviously, they didn't. And so they were persecuted along the way. Now, that's no justification for us as non-Jews to persecute the Jews. I'm not suggesting that in any way. But along the way, throughout the Old Testament, they rose and fell and came back and left, and Yahweh forgave them and took them back. But Solomon built a huge temple, and it was destroyed around 4-something B.C. before Christ. And they were all taken over, or not all of them. Some of them were captured and taken over to Babylon. A lot of them stayed, and the diaspora, which is a word that is used as an association to Jewish history, began. They spread out across the world. Later, there was a second building of the temple. King Herod built it. And that's the one that was around in Jesus' time. And again, it was destroyed in 70 AD, after Christ. And I'll stop there and I'll back up again. I have several starts and several back and forths along the way here. And feel free anytime if you have something you want to inject. I feel that with the coming of Jesus, the fulfillment of Israel as a great nation has been fulfilled. It's done. I don't think that is something that we as Christians, which is called Zionism, should be participating in. I think the land now becomes the inner hearts of each one of us. So I feel that part of it's done. Again, this is no reason to persecute the Jews. I don't want to in any way whatsoever think that because of this we're allowed to do nasty things, even though it has happened through time. The part that is eternal for me is the fact that Jesus came into this world and he ascended into the heavens and he sits at the right hand of the Father. And so that part of the promise is eternal. But the possession of the land is not. It was fulfilled. So how do I incorporate all this stuff in what is happening today? One of the big things that I think that has happened is people don't understand what anti-Semitic tropes are about. And I understand two of them that I want to look at is what Representative Omar said and something that President Trump said. And I understand, I don't want to get political, I just want to look at the tropes and try to understand them, because I wasn't quite sure I understood exactly the meaning of the tropes myself. And so eventually I want to get into that. But the word anti-Semitic or Semitic has a history. It didn't always mean a particular group of people. For a long time, it meant a language group. It was a group of languages that were spoken, not people. It started from about Ethiopia, went up into the Middle East, some of the Arab nations, and obviously the Hebrew people. And for a long time, that's what it was. There was a slow progression of it moving to mean the Jewish people or a ethnic group. It took time. The Christian faith, unfortunately, had a lot to do with changing the meaning of the word anti-Semitic or anti-Semitic. About 1870, Wilhelm Marr, who was a German, and for some reason, one of the things that I've learned about Jewish history and after Jesus, a lot happened in Germany, for some reason, and France. Basically France and Germany, a lot of things happened to the Jewish people as time moved on and some in Italy, but basically in Western Europe, a lot of things happened to the Jewish people. Wilhelm started a campaign against the Jews, and he was a German agitator, and by that time, the word Semitic meant a group of people, and it meant the Jews. So the word went through a transition to get to the point in which we call a group of people. It went from a language to a group of people. How did all of this hatred or animosity come about towards the Jews? It was a long road, and it's still going on today. At the beginning, there was a separate beginning of Christian around Paul. There was a great effort to separate themselves away from the Jewish people. They wanted to, the Christian faith wanted to, if you converted, that was fine. But there was this great effort by a lot of the leaders of the church in the beginning, in the first couple hundred years, to separate away from the Jewish faith. I think if you're a Jew, a rabbi Jew, an Orthodox Jew, if you look at honestly at the New Testament, I think you can find some anti-Semitic ideas in there, for sure. Because I don't think, I think there was a movement to move away from the laws, and even some of the apostles had an argument over how much Judaism they wanted to incorporate into the beginning of the Christian faith. There's no question about it. There was an effort to move away. And the ones that didn't convert, the Jewish people that didn't convert, well, there was an ostracization started happening and a split. I believe that God's plan to get back to what I, my understanding is that I think these group Elohim, or these group of gods, which I will, I'm sure some people will say it's a heretic, but I think they are part of the one God, with a capital one. And if you read in Deuteronomy 32, you should read that one if you want a little bit of evidence towards that idea. The Jewish people, or a group of people, which we call the Israelites, were raised up to bring forth a shining light to the world. I think that's true. I think that you can look back through time and you can see where the Israelite people rose, brought humanity to a new to a justice level. I think justice was brought onto the scene with the Jewish faith, and it permeated out. Jesus brought forgiveness and mercy, forgiveness, grace, and mercy. I think the plan in which was thought up for humanity was that the Jewish people were supposed to accept Christ as the Messiah and usher in a new era in the kingdom of God. That didn't happen. For some reason, I don't know why. I guess as the passage says here, as Moses is ready to die, and the children of Israel are getting ready to go take the promised land for the first time and go across the Jordan River, Yahweh, the God of Israel, knows in advance that they're going to fail. And that's really a kind of discouraging. Moses goes to his grave knowing that his people are going to fail. The effort to move, or to the animosity towards the Jewish people, continued in the separation and in the diaspora as they spread out amongst the, they lost their land and they started spreading out across the known world. They didn't assimilate into society. They lived in little groups by themselves. Most times they didn't have, the host nations didn't give them a real good way of participating. But they used to, they had to pay taxes into their host country, and thus a tax collector would be a Jewish person that had, who had to go around and collect taxes from the Jews and then give it to the nation. Thus, the hatred of the tax collector. He was a Jewish person. You heard the story about Jesus associated himself with the tax collectors because they were not liked. Thus, that's how that got started. There was always this hope to return to the land. The land is important for one reason, for the Orthodox and the Islamic people or the Palestinians, because redemption is only fulfilled with the ownership of the land. You have to live in the land in order for redemption to be, for them to be redeemed. So here you have two groups of people who claim redemption with one plot of land. So who owns the land? That's a really big question. If the Jewish people would have done what they were supposed to have done and moved the land inwardly, as Jesus said, there would be no squabble. Now, I'm not pointing my fingers at the Jewish people for failing, because we as Christians have failed also. So there's plenty of blame to go around. I'm not blaming anybody. I'm only trying to look at this in an objective fashion and try to understand. The land becomes so important that they fight, and there's wars and wars and wars and wars. So how are you going to resolve it? I don't know.
Sounds like people being people.
So this is where I'll inject the idea before I say a few other things. The idea of, before I get to the tropes. Now I forgot what I was going to say. Isn't that amazing? About the land. I don't know. It lost me. So there are several words that I want to look at that have a different meaning than what I think they do. The Holocaust. The Holocaust is a word that is not really in itself is a trope to the Jewish people too. We use that in a way that I think that they don't really appreciate. This is what I've learned. A Holocaust is a burnt offering unto God. And if you take the Old Testament, it's a burnt where you take an animal and you burn it up. Nobody eats nothing out of it. It gets burnt up. And they don't see themselves that when it came to the Holocaust and the German annihilation or the destruction as a sacrifice unto God. We may look at it, it came about because of how the Germans burnt the bodies. And so there's where the word got its origin, the Holocaust. But they are somewhat offended by it, the Orthodox are, because they don't... Here again, when I say the Jews are offended, as some groups are, some groups aren't, because there's a variation, there's a big line. Not all Jewish people are the same. They would prefer a catastrophe or destruction, denoting destruction of the Jewish people, denoting a close assimilation or to the destruction of the temple. So they would rather see that word used rather than a Holocaust. Yes.
Who put the word Holocaust on?
Christians.
Christians.
Yes. No question about it. Some of these words were Christians are guilty. There's no question about it. Along the way, the Christian faith is guilty. There's no question about it. In order to remove the idea of, I think one of the things that really upset a lot of people was the idea that Jews are chosen. The Jewish people are chosen. And they use that in ways, or people didn't like that necessarily. Now, one thing I should say is that there's only three tribes that are considered to be Jewish. Judah, Benjamin, and Levi. It's only three. The rest of the 10 moved up into after Solomon, the kingdom was divided, and 10 moved up into Assyria, and no one really knows. The Bible says they disappeared. I have heard a little bit of rumbling that some of these people seem to think that they know that they are some of the 10 lost tribes, but I'm not really convinced that that's so. There has been papers written. Armstrong, who wrote a big thick book about the Europe, was where the 10 lost tribes went up, and England and United States is Joseph's two children, Ephraim and Manasseh. Yes.
There could be a lot of people who are Jewish that don't think they are then.
No, they wouldn't be Jewish, because the term Jewish came after the separation and the three tribes, Judah, Benjamin, and the Levitical tribe of Levi.
And those ones went up there would actually...
They wouldn't be Jews. They would be Israelites.
Oh.
See, understanding the terminology sometimes, which most of us don't, and I'll admit that, you can really get lost in the whole thing. There's so much here that in order for me to just condense it into 15 minutes is really difficult. I listened to some of my teaching tapes on Judaism and Between the Cross and the Crescent, and my head began to spin around backwards. And there's just so much. I mean, the Jewish faith is so complex, and Judaism is so complex, that you cannot say that every Jewish person thinks the same thing. So who owns the land? So if you consider the only two tribes that are considered to be Jews are the tribe of Benjamin and the tribe of Judah, then there's only two plots that you could argue that should be today's Israel, if you're doing from a biblical standpoint. Here's where it really gets murky, because some people in the Zionist way of expression say that they should have it all, the original agreement. This is where the tension comes in with the Palestinians, the West Bank and all.
Because they were living there.
Yeah, because they were living there. So in 1948, they got kicked out again. And the Palestinians, and I don't know how a nice way to say this, but the Palestinians were a lot of people who remained there that are a mixed breed of Arab cultures or ethnicity, and nobody wants them. Because of the many times that the Israelite people were kicked out, or the original people were kicked out, and Israel came in, like we were reading today, and then they were kicked out in various different wars back and forth. There was a lot of people who stayed there. I mean, with war, you have men, raping and having affairs with the local women, and these are where the Palestinians come from. And it's, yes.
So the Palestinians and the Jewish all kind of have the same blood.
Yeah. Well, see, that's another complicated thing. You want to go the whole way. You want to say their father is the same. Muslims want to say, and Jewish people want to say, they have the same father. And that's true. But they have a different mother. One of them comes from Esau.
Isaac.
Go. See, it gets really confusing sometimes. And the other one came from Ishmael. And both were promised a blessing. Both children were promised a blessing. The one came from Sarai, and the other one came from Abraham's slave, in which she had an offspring. So to say they're all the same blood... Yeah, that'd probably be a better way to say it. The males always rule the patriarch, so you would say, yes, they had the same father, but that's about as far as you can say. So, see, all of this stuff is, we can all just throw it out the window, but it's on the world scene today, and it's live and well. And I think it's incumbent upon, especially Christians, to understand a little bit of it anyway. So, so as we move forward, I do think there was one thing that I wanted to share, if I could find it. Oh, here it is. In one of my, along with the course tapes that I get, there's a book that comes with it that has a summation of a lot of what goes on in each course or in each lecture. And I was struck by, under lecture 17, it said, Understanding Medieval Semitic.
Semitism.
There you go, Semitism. In the beginning of this course, how closely it reminded me of what's happening today. It really did. I was really like amazed. There was a historians, it says, offer a variety of explanations. Why? It seems around the 12th and the 13th century is when a lot of this Jewish hatred really, during the Crusades and all of that, it really fermented. It really, really fermented. And it says that you can't really blame the church per se. It was not. But as other than just try to say it nicely, I can't. So I'll say it how I can. It was the average person who fermented a lot of the hatred towards the Jewish people. Similar to what's happening today. And it was lack of education and understanding the situation is what fermented it. It wasn't necessarily the leadership and the government. Yes, in some cases the government, as we have today, kind of promotes some kind of segmentation and segregation and ostracization and what have you, and exploiting one group over the other. That's basically what happened in the 12th and 13th century. It fermented tremendously. The Crusades, we all know what the Crusades were about. There was an annihilation of a lot of people. Either you confessed or you were dead. And yes, Connie. Now that you say that, I agree with you. And one of the comments that I wrote down, a trope is only a trope if you don't trust the person who's saying it. And then I added, otherwise it's comedy. Carol, if I may use your illustration, we had a little bit of conversation. She actually listened to the YouTube thing or the Facebook thing, and she said, and I agree with her, there's this long line of history, and it goes down through time. There is people on every slot along the way, and everybody there wants to have a voice and wants to say and stand up and say that they're right. We haven't all progressed to a more progressive point of view. We haven't. Every idea is represented. The more complex we get, the more division we make, the more there's a group of people who want to stand up and yell and scream at us. To say it kind of bluntly. That's what's happening.
And we can read Genesis and apply those stories to things that are still happening. And it happens throughout history. And it just seems like people don't really learn.
The Tower of Babel, I think, could be applied here very well. Come let us go up and confuse them. I think that certainly illustrates the confusion that's around today. I think you can look at that and say, yep, we have all different languages, we have all different kinds of people, and we are still in a state of confusion. I think that story really illustrates it very well. And that's one of the oldest stories in the Bible. So it's been going on for a long, long, long time. All right. Right. So I want to look at Judaism today a little bit, and then I want to go over to the two tropes, and then I'm going to be done, unless somebody else has something to add. Judaism today in the United States is a progressive Judaism. If you see synagogue on the front of the church, there are synagogues and temples. If you see synagogue on it, you can usually generally say that the land is still important to them. This is a simplification. If you see temple, they no longer see the land as being important. They no longer see that they want to return to Israel. This is where what Donald Trump said really offended 70% of the Jewish people in the United States. So you have one group that wants to have return to the temple, and rebuild the temple, and the Christian faith wants to help them, and for whatever reason, I don't know why the Christian faith wants to rebuild the temple and start their sacrifices back up and all that kind of stuff, and reinstitute all the Jewish laws, and I for the life of me, I cannot figure out why, because supposedly, if the temple is rebuilt and the sacrifices come, then the end of the world is supposed to come in the Christian faith. And it's maddening. It really is just simply maddening sometimes. The stuff that that we believe without even checking out. I'll just add a comment here about the end of the world. I think Jesus freed us to live our lives healthy, wealthy, and wise, and we can live as all of humanity together. I think that was one of the main messages of Jesus. Come on, you can get it together. You know, you can be different. You can think different. You can do whatever. Get it together. Love your neighbors yourself. Have fun. Live your life. All we do is squabble over little things, little words. It's unbelievable. So 70% of the Jewish people in the United States are temple worshipers. They don't see the land as being important no more. The land becomes within themselves. So when Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful, because I had to do a little research myself to figure out exactly what it all meant. When he said that if you vote for a Democrat, you are disloyal to the state of Israel, to some of that fact. He was assuming that 70% of the Jews, all the Jews in the United States, still thought the land was important and they wanted to return to the land of Israel. Unfortunately, 70% of the Jews don't align themselves at all with that. And they vote Democrat. And so, unknowing or knowing, yes.
Did you know that before you researched that,
though? I wasn't sure about it, no. And that's why in all this, I educated myself also, and I think most people probably didn't understand the difference of what Donald Trump said, President Donald Trump, or Representative Omar said. Neither one of them, I don't think, understood what the average person, yes.
There's one interesting fact that contradicts him, of course, and that is that there would be no state of Israel without Harry Truman.
And your point is?
The Democratic president named Harry Truman is responsible for the creation.
Okay, so, right. Here again, he's the very president that instituted or whatever was part of the foundation of Israel as we know it today was a Democrat. Right. So, I think it's incumbent again on ourselves to be educated and to understand what's going on. It didn't take me long. I researched it a little bit, and I understand the average person don't really want to do it. The progressive, it's called progressive or reconstructionists of the 19th century have changed a lot of what we understand Judaism. Now, when Representative Omar said it was all about the Benjamin, well, I thought it meant the tribe of Benjamin, quite frankly. But that's how illiterate I am. But I'd be curious to think what anybody else thought. No one wants to share their what they thought.
I thought money.
Money, yeah. If I would have thought a little bit, I would have thought it was about the money. So where did the idea of Jews always having money or participating in money in banking, it came from the Christians. Early on, you were not allowed in the Christian faith to loan money to your fellow Christian for interest. And so they gave it to they set up a Jew who they gave the money to a Jew, and then they would loan it to their brother. And they would collect the interest, and they would indirectly get the interest off the Jew. The Jew would be in between. And that's how that got started. On and on as it went, because the Jewish people were so mobile, and every now and then they would quite often they get kicked out of a host nation, they had to be very portable. And so one of the ways was if they moved to another place, they would collect their money, they would loan it out to the Gentiles, and they would get wealthy. So the idea, it's all about the money, has been, again, brought about by the Christians. Yes?
There's another complicating factor, and that is that almost throughout Europe, Jews were not allowed to own land.
Yes, that's a very important point.
One of the few ways they could survive by lending money.
Yes.
And the Christians were more than willing to borrow it.
Yes. Yes, the ownership of land was not allowed, and owning businesses and what have you was kind of limited. And that was, now that you bring up that point, as the diaspora happened, they would start these different communities, and they would started into trade, and they would, they were a part of the trade. You know, there's a lot of money made in trade, and it was about money. How do I want to conclude this? My opinion is that all sides need to come together and have a Jesus moment. They need to forgive themselves and move away from their traditional way of thinking and have a Jesus moment and live together. I think that's the only way out. As long as we're going to argue over a plot of land and or whether or not it's two parcels or 12 parcels, we're not, it's just going to be upheaval all the time. I don't think that. And do I think that the children of Israel are chosen? Not no more. I think they should be seen. Did you?
Finish your thought.
I don't think that they're any different in Jesus' eyes or in God's eyes as anybody else. I think that's all fulfilled. I think that's done. Granted, the Israelite people, the Jewish people have contributed a lot to the world, an awful lot, and still do. And so has a lot of other cultures. And so in that sense, they are equal again. I think we need, okay, Connie, I'm...
Sorry, I just was thinking that in many ways, the Israelites are like we were when we started this nation. We were fighting a larger, more established countries to try to keep what we saw as ours. And in many ways, I think that's why there's so much sympathy for the nation, maybe not so much for the Jewish religion itself, that they're a David to the Goliath of Islam.
Geopolitics, how you see Israel in geopolitics is another whole different matter. I didn't even want to get into that part of it, because that's a whole separate issue. As far I'm talking about the more biblical aspect of it,
yeah.
And
but that's why there's sympathy in our country, but maybe not liking for the Jewish people.
I think there's a lot of people who would fall under the tutelage of the Israelite or the Jewish people because their salvation is connected to it. Zionists. They see the only redemption or the coming of Jesus is tied directly to what happens in Israel. There's a huge percentage of people call them Christians, are tied to that fact. And I think that needs to be untethered. Yes, your Christian faith should not be tethered to what happens in Israel, period. What happens when they rebuild the temple? What do you think is going to does anybody want to guess what happens if they, supposedly all the blocks are already cut and standing and ready to build? They can slam it up in a week or two, the way I understand. The red heifer, there was one raised in the United States, but they had to niche its ear to ship it across, and that made it impure. So they have to have a red heifer to start the process to sanctify the altar. Last I knew, they were very, very close to having the red heifer. If they didn't have it, that was several years ago. So I'm imagining they probably had the red heifer. So what does the people, what do we think is going to happen?
All hell will break loose.
All hell will break loose.
I described my theory. Can't we just get along?
Well, there are people, money, huge amounts of money going into this. We could laugh at this, but it's not funny. It's very, very serious. That who want to rebuild the temple and you know, the mosque, I think, is the only, I mean, to wipe that mosque off the top of that is a war immediately.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. And there are people on both sides of Islam and Christians who do want to push the world to the brink of war and start war in the effort to bring a new heaven and a new earth and to bring the return of Jesus. This is not, there's a huge amount of people. Huge. They're going to be raptured. The rapture dispensationalism comes in and all this. There's a huge amount of people who believe in the rapture and dispensationalism in all its forms. Huge.
I don't think Jesus wants us to have a war.
Well, no.
Love one another.
I think it's a lack of education and a lack of preachers who preach the truth. And I'm sorry, that's how I see it. And it's been going on. There seems to be this idea of chosenness. We like this idea of being chosen above, to use Carol's analogy, this whole big timeline. Everybody wants to be this chosen one that's in the middle, jump up over top of everybody else. And there's where we're at. And there's where we're at. It's not about all being alike. It's about different becoming, getting along. I don't care if my Jewish brothers and sisters worship the way they do. That's fine. That's fine. Or the Muslim people worship the way they want. Or the Hindus worship the way they want. Or me as a Christian worship the way I'm. Can't we just love one another? We're worshiping God. There's various different ways of doing it. So why not just be happy with people worshiping God or expressing a higher power in very.
You don't have fear of one another. That you can say hello. That
yeah.
You don't have fear of one another.
Yeah. I don't. Why can't we get over that hump? I don't know.
Feet that body of Christ.
For the saving of the world, we give and we pray. Amen.